ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Monday, the 27th of July. I'm Melissa Clark in Canberra, coming to you from Ngunnawal country and acknowledging other custodians. Victoria's Premier Jacinta Allen is facing a leadership challenge this week, just 4 months out from the November state election. Labor's factional leaders believe she no longer has the support of the party's MPs and want her to resign ahead of a caucus meeting tomorrow. Polling earlier this month showed Jacinta Allen is one of the most unpopular state leaders in Australian history, and that support for One Nation has overtaken both Labor and the Coalition in Victoria for the first time. For more, I spoke to Victorian political reporter Richard Willingham. Rich, has Jacinta Allen lost the support of the majority of her colleagues?
Well, certainly enough of her colleagues think so. Now, these numbers haven't been tested yet, and a lot of MPs say they haven't even been canvassed for their opinion yet. But there is a view, a group of sub-factional bosses met last night, and they decided that things needed to change. And one of their plans is to go to Jacinta Allen as early as today and say she's lost support of the caucus and she needs to resign. Other MPs are saying, well, hold on, we think she's still got enough support and she's not going anywhere. So no one's saying they've actually, you know, written down every single number yet. It's quite fluid, the situation, but certainly there is a group who believe that she's lost the support and are going to take action.
There have been rumblings about her leadership and the prospects of the party for the forthcoming state election for quite some time now. So what's triggered this move by factional leaders now?
Well, it's really all about the timing. So tomorrow, Parliament resumes after a five-week winter break. There was talk earlier this year, you know, 6 weeks ago when Parliament had its last sitting before the winter break, that if they were to move, they had to move then. And it never eventuated. There was no challenge ever came. That was the sort of feeling. And there's sort of the feeling now that this is the last chance to, if I had to have a change, to get someone new in, to give them, you know, 3 months to sort of establish themselves in the minds of voters before they head to the polls in November. Jacinta Allen's polling, the government's polling is pretty poor and it hasn't improved for several months. And I think one of the things that most spooks Labor MPs and who are agitating for change is the fact that Jacinta Allen's personal popularity is really, really low. In terms of, you know, most popular premier, she's right down the bottom. She's not the preferred premier. Jess Wilson, the Liberal leader, is in most polling. And there is a view that Jacinta Allen has become a drag on the Labor Party's vote. And there is, you know, it's quite vitriolic dislike for the Premier, unfairly or fairly, in the community. And that makes it hard to campaign. And there's also, I think, the sort of big elephant in the room is the ongoing corruption allegations, that have sort of engulfed the construction sector, particularly on government projects, which is something that Daniel Andrews started, those big build constructions, lots of big projects for Victoria. And Jacinta Allen was the minister under Daniel Andrews in charge of all those projects and has inherited them and continued to push them as top of her agenda. And these stories first broke 2 years ago. And I think there's concern that they don't feel that Jacinta Allen has responded adequately enough. Now, those calls for a royal commission continue to grow and she continues to dismiss them. Now, there is plans, I understand, today for the Premier was to take to Cabinet a plan to set up an organised crime commission through Victoria Police. That's to be discussed at Cabinet today and even announced today. And it was sort of seen not only as something that Victoria Police wants, but something that Jacinta Allen can then say, this is how she's dealing with the corruption allegations. I think the horse has probably bolted and I think the public is already pretty worried and sceptical about the response to the corruption allegations and that makes it very difficult for the Premier in this position right now. And it's one of the reasons I think that she can't get any clear air to try and re-establish herself. That's one of the reasons her colleagues are agitating for change. And many of them believe a royal commission is the answer, just to put it to bed.
Richard Willingham there. An eight-month investigation by Four Corners has raised serious questions about whether Australians can trust the labels on everyday supermarket goods. Extensive laboratory testing of hundreds of items across major brands found some products had been adulterated or didn't match their label. Adele Ferguson reports.
It's a common item in your pantry, but is it exactly what it says on the tin? Leading forensic lab Saw Certain carried out testing on dozens of processed tomato goods. One in four products raised concerns.
Either failed or were subject to some further investigation, which indicates that it hasn't come from the origin that is claimed.
That's Cameron Scadding from Source Certain. His team analysed the products to see where the tomatoes came from. Forensically tracing and comparing the unique elements left from the soil, water and climate where they were grown.
And so what that tells us is that the metals that are in there, it tells us whereabouts it's been grown. So if you compare Italy to China in this example, the metals that end up in the tomatoes are different if they're from Italy as opposed to China.
Legos promotes its tomato paste as being made with Australian-grown tomatoes. The lab found otherwise. We tested 33 Legos pastes bought from supermarkets across multiple stores in different states and found 27 or 80% contained tomatoes from China. Its passata and diced tomatoes all passed the test.
It was a surprise, primarily because they make such a clear Australian claim.
Food supply chains are complex and problems can arise at any stage, including those outside the control of the manufacturer. Lego's owner Simplot declined an interview, but in a statement rejected the test results and said it had a trusted supplier and does regular due diligence. It said it had supply chain documentation tracing the failed products back to Australian farms where the tomatoes were grown, but it said it hadn't done forensic testing. Cameron Scadding stands by his team's science.
When we issue a finding of verified, we stand behind that finding of verified. We're never 100% certain. From a science point of view, none of the sciences are perfect like that.
Eggs, spices and seafood were among other items that failed our testing.
The ACCC should take punitive action in the courts if their laboratory tests are true.
Alan Fells is the former boss of Australia's consumer watchdog. He says companies should make sure their labels are accurate.
It's open season on food fraud, and that shouldn't happen in a country like Australia.
Food fraud is deception for profit, things like cheaper ingredient substitutes or diluted products. It is estimated to cost Australia up to $3 billion a year, but it's not easy to detect.
Consumers need to have complete faith in the labels on the products they buy, but they can't at the moment.
Former ACCC Chair Alan Fells ending that report. The ongoing wildfires in Spain and southwest France have forced more than 300,000 people to evacuate. Authorities are battling dry conditions to bring the blazes under control ahead of another heatwave forecast for this week. Cyan Valence reports from London.
Firefighters battle roaring flames, whipped out of control by erratic winds. Police in the French commune of Marcheprime, around 35 kilometres southwest of Bordeaux, knock on doors one by one, telling residents to leave. About 220,000 people have been evacuated in France, while in Spain more than 75,000 people have had to leave their homes. Flames have advanced to within 15 kilometres of Bordeaux. It's home to 270,000 people and host to thousands more tourists. The summer holidays mean July and August are usually its busiest months, but French officials are now asking holidaymakers to stay away. Blair Connor grew up in Brisbane but now runs a bar in Bordeaux where he's lived for 16 years. He told the ABC he's never seen the city like this.
Today, for example, was a Sunday in Bordeaux during the peak sort of tourist season, and the town's a ghost town. The people in this area have had live fires before, but nothing like this. And the big problem now is sort of the uncertainty.
The fire is so fierce, it's created its own weather system, known as pyrocumulonimbus. While this has happened in Australia and North America, it's the first time the phenomenon has been seen in France. In Spain, several fires continue to burn. One blaze in the Castellón region in the country's east is still burning beyond extinguishing capacity. Conditions have eased for the blaze in the Madrid region, but as Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez visited some of the worst hit areas in Avila, he warned the situation is far from over.
Quedan horas complejas.
Complicated hours lie ahead, the Prime Minister said. Spain's capital is blanketed in smoke. Tourist Leticia Lucas is visiting Madrid from Canada, which has also been battling fires.
We thought we left the bad air quality and then we came here. So it's unfortunate and sad to see how our world is changing. We want to come and explore it, and then we keep seeing how global warming is harming Mother Nature, right?
The fires have prompted the Prime Minister to call for a national pact on the climate emergency. We must translate that duty into action, Pedro Sanchez said, saying the government's response had to match the scale of the climate emergencies. Europe is warming faster than any other continent, and there's another heatwave forecast across Europe this week. In London, this is Cyan Valence reporting for AM.
Violence has erupted across the West Bank after the single deadliest shooting attack in the occupied Palestinian territory this year. Israeli settlers have firebombed buildings and attacked Palestinians after two settlers were shot near the city of Nablus on Friday. Four Palestinians were also killed in the attack, with locals arguing they're the victims of sustained Israeli aggression and are trying to defend themselves. Middle East correspondent Matthew Doran reports.
In a hall in the Palestinian village of Tel, members of the community line up to pay their respects. Four members of the Ramadan family were killed on Friday, among them Ahmed Ali Ramadan's son, Imran.
All they want to do is kick us out of our country. It's an honour for us to die here and be buried here. We will not leave this land.
He's referring there to the threats and intimidation from Israeli settlers whose occupation of the West Bank is considered illegal under international law and who were involved in the shooting on Friday. A group from a nearby settlement say they were hiking through Tel near the city of Nablus when they were confronted by local Palestinians. Two of the settlers were killed in the shooting, but local residents insist it was the Israelis who were armed and aggressive, backed up by soldiers. Ahmed says his son was the victim.
My message is, we are not terrorists. They send their terror to us.
The Israeli army and the settlers are two sides of the same coin.
Hassan Douglas is the governor of the Nablus area.
What happened is a big disaster for the people and the farmers and the landowners, the Palestinians.
Some of the settlers remain camped at the site of the shooting on the edge of the village. When we came across them, they threatened to shoot us if we didn't leave the area quickly, keeping watch and following us as we returned down the narrow road between the olive groves and houses and back into the middle of Tel. Their retaliatory attacks against the Palestinians continued in the hours after the shooting. Ahmed Rawi Abdallah Tarabi's home in the neighbouring village was set on fire.
We do what we can. We are not armed. We don't have weapons, only stones and sticks.
Family and friends were spending the day trying to repair the damage and make the house livable once more. Much of the area remains in a state of lockdown, with the Israeli military deploying extra soldiers to the region around Nablus, manning more checkpoints and shutting down more roads than are usually blocked. Raids were carried out across the area over the weekend, with more than 130 Palestinians detained, and orders have been given to demolish the homes of those involved in the shooting. Israel's Prime Minister is Benjamin Netanyahu.
The instructions we gave were to enter the villages, search them, seize weapons, and make arrests. We're prepared to act more broadly against terrorist strongholds.
Members of the Netanyahu coalition cabinet, including far-right Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich and National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir, are demanding an even harsher response, forcing more communities out and taking their land. In one village, half an hour's drive away from the shooting, a partially built mosque was also firebombed by settlers. One of the words spray-painted on the outside of the building, sending a message to locals: revenge. This is Matthew Doran in the West Bank, reporting for AM.
There are calls to investigate popular online retailer Kogan over whether it's misleading customers by offering them dubious discounts. The ABC can reveal Kogan's use of a little-known website where it's selling the same products for mostly much higher prices compared to its main website, Kogan.com. It then appears to offer large discounts to shoppers on Kogan.com compared to its other website's higher prices. National Consumer Affairs reporter Michael Aitken has more.
Tracy Villani bought an air conditioner from the Kogan website during a heatwave.
Price was definitely a factor. I had compared prices with all the major retailers.
The Adelaide woman paid $780, which Kogan advertised was a significant discount.
The price that they were selling it for was quite a few hundred dollars below the recommended retail price.
The ABC can reveal Kogan is using a second website called Exclusive Brands. Exclusive Brands sells the same private label products as the Kogan website, but usually for much more, with discounts offered on Kogan.com. An example was a Brossa sofa, which cost almost $4,000 on Exclusive Brands, but was only $1,229 on Kogan.com, advertised as a discount from the standard retail price of almost $4,000.
I think this is extremely concerning, and look, it needs investigation.
Former consumer watchdog boss Rod Sims wants the ACCC to investigate.
I think if the comparison site is one that is not being promoted, not being used, then it's pretty hard to see that it makes a legitimate comparison. To me, that would be against the law and of great concern.
The consumer watchdog, the ACCC, declined to comment on whether it would investigate. It said consumer law prevented businesses from making false or misleading statements about prices, including about savings and discounts.
I think people would feel manipulated, actually.
That's consumer law expert Jeannie Patterson from the University of Melbourne. She agrees an investigation is needed to establish whether Kogan is using fake discounts to lure customers.
And if that's the case, it does start to look like the discount is a kind of made-up discount from an inflated price that products are notionally but never really sold at.
Kogan was unavailable for interview. In a statement, the retailer denied any wrongdoing and said it takes its obligations to present pricing clearly and accurately very seriously. It added that Kogan.com only advertises a standard retail price as a reference price where it's been offered on Kogan.com for a reasonable time.
Michael Atkin with that report. The Australian government is trying to get a hold of one of the world's most valuable artificial intelligence systems in a bid to protect national infrastructure. Anthropic's Claude Mythos is currently being safeguarded by the US government, with only a small number of American companies allowed to use its supremely powerful and advanced cybersecurity tools. The concern is that if it's in the wrong hands, it can be used for sophisticated cyber hacking. But the Prime Minister wants it to help keep Australia's financial, security and critical infrastructure systems safe. Diana Demjanovic reports.
It's the AI model too powerful for public use, and the Australian government wants it.
It's designed to find the very things that hackers exploit.
AI expert Dr. Andrew Cullen from the University of Melbourne explains the hype behind Anthropic's Claude Mythos.
It tells a cybersecurity expert or a programmer, hey, here is a fault in your code that a hacker could exploit, and it kind of gives them a potential pathway for fixing that.
Earlier this month, the Prime Minister delivered a major speech outlining how his government would integrate artificial intelligence into our economy, the Australian way. Getting access to Claude Mythos seems central to this.
We're in discussions with Anthropic and other companies as well. The speech that I gave was about setting parameters for that.
Mythos works by autonomously scanning software code, discovering hidden security flaws, which could be decades old. And it's much more powerful than traditional scanners. But as with many types of AI, there's a danger too, says Andrew Cullen.
Cyber defenders will take more time to respond to the information they get from Mythos, whereas a hacker can act on it straight away. And so realistically, there's a lot of value to hackers, and that's why governments and Anthropic themselves are trying to restrict its use at the moment.
Dr. Cullen explains the US government is currently withholding access to Claude Mythos, with only some select US companies able to get their hands on it. In part, it's to stop the powerful tool getting into the wrong hands of hackers and ensure governments and critical systems have a head start. Scarlett McDermott is the founder of Longitude Advisory, a tech advisory firm which works with businesses around Australia.
I think Australia is prepared to take on Mythos because, you know, regardless of our internal capability, the world has Mythos now. So for Australia not to have it is putting us a step behind.
One of Anthropic's major competitors, OpenAI, admitted last week one of its models broke out of a test environment and stole data from another company. The big question for many is whether Australia can handle the dark side of the artificial intelligence revolution.
Diana Demjanovic and Catherine Gregory reporting. And that's AM for today. Thank you for your company. I'm Melissa Clark.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. Is AI making us dumber? Are we starting to rely on it to think for us? Today, Stephen Shaw from the University of Pennsylvania on his research into cognitive surrender, AI, and your brain. Look for the ABC News Daily Podcast on ABC Listen.